welcome to the End Evil podcast. Evil is the destruction of freedom, and freedom is the future I want to work towards, and it's what I want to see for human beings, because right now in the world, most human beings aren't free. We're facing a lot of slavery in this world, and that's why we're continuing discussions on End Evil podcast on how to change the minds and the thinking and the actions of human beings on this planet, working towards a better future. And to that end, I have two awesome special guests with me today. I'm going to introduce my man, James Cordner, and the wonderful and beautiful Leslie Powers. And Leslie and I wanted to get together with James because we're both excited. He's released a new project, his Voluntarist Academy podcast and website. That's voluntaristacademy.com. Thanks for joining us, James, and thanks, Leslie, for coming to join us with this convo, too. What's up, guys?
Excited. Hey, James. Hey, Chris.
Leslie, Chris, great to be back with both you guys.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Exciting.
Yeah, it was like you went into the cave, you know, for a bit. And, you know, you did some transformation and came out the other side. And so now we're excited to talk to you about kind of your transformation process and what you're starting with, you know, this fresh energy and effort that you're putting forward.
Last summer we had the Seed 5 conference right at the end of the summer, and then Autonomy Season 10 started up pretty much like the next week, and I'd already kind of planned on putting A Hitchhiker's Guide to Truth on hiatus during my time in Autonomy. But then throughout the season, when I was learning all these new skills and really trying to like focus in on what I could bring to the table when I made my return to the content creation, I thought to myself, I have all these great things, but they're all disassociated from one another. I have a website that's great, but it's not the same name as the podcast. And I have a podcast that's great, but there's no real direction with it. So it's kind of a toss up every week. And all of these different, you know, thoughts started coming to mind. And I wouldn't say self-conscious, but it was actually a really good exercise in self-reflection of, if I'm going to do this content creation, I should really make a concerted effort to making sure that everything's really easy and accessible, and also that I needed to start from scratch in order to achieve that goal. And if I were to start from scratch, what would I want to do? I would want to make sure that I have a direction to head in where there's consistency in the method and the message that I use and choose to put out there to the people. And that is how Voluntarist Academy came to be. That was the inception of it, the birth of it. So after Autonomy Season 10 wrapped up and I did all the graduation stuff and everything, I started building the website, because I figured, what good is the podcast if I don't have the website to really direct people to some place where, you know, I just thought that would be the best first step. So that's what I did. And then the website launched in April, and here we are in June. And so the channel is very fresh, right? And it's going strong, but it's very, very fresh. And so my goal is, for the time being, to really try to expose how long this idea of voluntarism has been around. So this philosophy of voluntarism has been around for over 100 years. And my goal is try to outline to people what could our society today have looked like if the idea of voluntarism had been adopted when it was first presented all that time ago. And I'm choosing to do that in an effort to try to help people realize that now is a perfect time as well to start adapting this philosophy into their own lives, because it all starts in the individual with all of our individual rights and understanding of natural law and making sure that we don't initiate harm and aggression onto other people and, quite frankly, sentient beings. I know the sentient being thing is kind of a difficult pill for a lot of people to swallow, but let's, I guess, start with our own species first and make, and then we, you know, that's my approach to it anyways. So that's kind of like where all this is coming from. And what I'm choosing to do with the channel is make short podcasts and to have the long form content be me literally just reading material about the topic. Authors like Lysander Spooner, Auberin, and then I'm even going to move on to some Murray Rothbard, some Anthony C. Sutton. I have planned to actually, the big project is to read The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America by Charlotte Thompson Iserbeet, because anyone that knows me knows that I have what you could call a vendetta against the public school system in America and worldwide, quite frankly. So what I'm building toward is a sort of chronological ordered exposure of how the heck did we get to where we are right now, and where and what could we do to form a better future for generations to come. Because you guys know I have children, and I'm a big believer in making a better future. I think that we can do it if we really put our minds to it. And, you know, they deserve it. They deserve a good future. And so, I mean, that's overall like the goal with my new channel here and my new love for content creation and what I want to put out in the world. Because I guess the idea of the law of attraction, if I'm putting it out, maybe it can happen, you know? And so
I like how you're connecting the dots from the history, the past, to where we are in the present, and then the impact onto the future, that causal line, cause and effect line, and bringing education, like, first and foremost.
Yeah, you know, I think too, like, this whole process that you've described, James, it's right along the lines of some things I've been sharing with people on this podcast, where being content creators or being any type of creative creator, as far as that goes, there's this process of what I just called recently throw spaghetti on the wall. And then you kind of like realize that, oh, shoot, the way I was doing the show or the way I was putting this material out there was missing this element, or like you're saying, it wasn't all, it felt disjointed to you. So then we kind of have to hibernate for a minute and calculate in our mind a different strategy going forward. And really that same process is what humanity needs to do to solve the bigger problems, is we need to stop what we're doing and calculate and re-strategize going forward. How can we do things differently? Because the same pattern has been happening over and over, you know, all through history. And we're getting the same conclusions. Don't you want to see a different conclusion for your grandchildren, you know? And so one thing that occurred to me, James, though, is you went to, was this just last year or the year before, you went to Pork Fest, right?
Yeah, last year, in 2023, yeah.
That was cool. I remember seeing the pictures. I'm curious, since you, you know, this period of time you went through, since Hitchhiker's Guide to Truth, and the time you spent in autonomy, and just discussions you've had with various people between now and then, has that been part of how you change your approach, how you speak to people, how you try to convey information? Have you learned some specific things in that process?
Yeah, I've learned that it's very important to try to be concise with your speech and to try to attempt to make sure that when you walk away from the conversation, there's a good understanding of what you're, you know, trying to say. And it can be difficult. I'm still practicing it. I think it's a lifelong practice, if I'm being honest. That might just be my own personal take. and that's okay. But I between Porkfest and autonomy and everything, another thing that I've realized is that it can be very challenging to deal with people who aren't at the same level as you might be in regards to understanding what it's going to take in order to achieve a real state of freedom. And coming from a position of somebody who wants that, I've learned that the approach of being kind of harsh gets you absolutely nowhere. And it doesn't help the situation whatsoever. And so adopting the mentality of being a teacher includes understanding that the reason you're teaching is because the person you're teaching isn't where you're at. So in order for you to, like, right just at this moment, I'm thinking about the golden rule, treat others the way that you would like to be treated. So I'm not going to learn if I'm being yelled at. That's not how I receive information well, and that's not how I accept the information that I'm being told. I tend to reject things that I'm being screamed at about, and I, you know, unless it's really, really pertinent information, then it's like, okay, I can separate that. But more than not, when I'm being screamed at or I'm being yelled at about stuff, it's like, meh, I don't really have time to, you know, that's not how the information is received by me. So why should I do that to other people? Your question makes me think about this one situation last year at Porkfest when I was talking to this guy, and I was talking to him about Satanism and how it's not like how people think it is and how morality is objective. And he was mocking me right to my face, and I had to really just remain calm and just realize that this is a person who might only need the idea right now. And I don't need to walk away thinking that I'm convinced that I've convinced him of anything, but at least the idea has been put in front of him. And maybe that's where he's at right now. The seed needs to be planted and it'll blossom someday. And if I'm going to start being all, you know, combative with him, it'll never happen. So things like that come to mind.
Yeah. I'm interested to hear about what are the most like relevant aspects of this history that you think are important to know, you know, for people to understand how we got here.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is just how long the idea of non-aggression and voluntarism and ultimately anarchism have been being presented in a very, very, like, very calm and, I guess I would say professional manner. And how would Douglas Martin said that we need to be scholarly in our approach. That's the way Douglas Martin put it years and years ago. And that always stuck with me. And so when we're looking back at history, we see people, like I mentioned earlier, like Lysander Spooner, like Benjamin Tucker, Auburn Herbert, these people throughout history that were presenting these ideas, and they were doing it in a very scholarly way, but they were largely ignored because it, for whatever reason. So immediately I think of, like, that is a very important way to approach it. Look how long this has been around, you know.
The question was the most pertinent elements of the history, you know, that you want to share, right, about voluntarism. And, you know, and that includes the fact that it's a long history of people sharing this information, but it hasn't been really conveyed to the average person, right?
It just occurred to me, though, and I've said this before, anarchy or voluntarism would actually be the oldest way of being in existence, because before we had any structures of control, all we had was natural law, right? So in the very beginning of human interaction, the very first human interaction would have been an anarchistic human, until one of them decided to coerce the other one. Sorry to interrupt.
The other part that I would think about would be to present to people the developments that we have made since these ideas were first introduced. And over time, we've been able to discover more of the workings of natural law and how property really works. And it's, we've been able to modernize it in both in speech, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, because going through some of this old text, it can be really hard to digest in the modern times. We don't have the same manner of speech and the same writing that was around 150 years ago. It just doesn't translate well. So there's an extra effort needed there to really understand the workings of Lysander Spooner and some of these old cats that were, you know, dealing out this information all the way back then. So bringing that into the modern time is extremely important, because if people are like, oh, what's this? Like, all this mine and thine type of language, it can be, like I said, that extra effort, you know, is something that people need to take, but it can be a little bit like, it can drive people away. So, I mean, really, but when it comes down to it, it's why it's a science. You know, it's because we've been able to really narrow it down and perform the experiments over and over again, achieving the same results over and over again, and really realizing that this is just how it works. And you're right, Chris, like, we had nothing but natural law before the formation of governments and stuff like that. Like, natural law is eternal. We all know this, and I hope your audience knows this as well. You know, and anarchism, I like to say, is not an action. Anarchy has nothing to do with action. In fact, anarchism is a condition. So if we have slavery, what's the opposite of slavery? Freedom. Well, what's the etymological definition of anarchy? An, without, archon, that's how we get archy, rulers. If we are without rulers, then we have freedom. So anarchism is the opposite of slavery. And so therefore, anarchism is a condition of our existence. So if we want to achieve a condition of anarchism, if we want to attain, maintain, and retain that condition of anarchism, it's going to take action. What type of action? Voluntary action, voluntary interaction between all people with the consciousness to understand when you're about to initiate harm that you can use your own free will to not do it. You can say no. You can walk away. It's actually a lot easier to do that than it is to go through with the harm. People like to say that it's the opposite of what I just said, that harm is easy. No, it's not. No, it isn't. Walking away from it and not causing it, that's a lot easier. And so thinking of it that way, the word voluntary, it means free will, your own volition. Think of it that way. Your own free will choices, that's voluntary. That's how voluntarism is built. And so it comes down to each individual understanding that their actions affect other people and that they have control over their own actions in all places at all times. So if we really just learn that one principle of like self-ownership, then we can really make a drastic impact on the future if we really set our sights on that.
I like that, you know, the version. Okay, when I first started looking into different podcasts on freedom and discovering, like you're saying, some of the authors, Lysander Spooner was a big one that hit me. This Highwayman, especially. I love that story. And I think that Highwayman would be a great story to do, kind of like a Lysander Spooner, Larkin Rose style skit, you know, the way he did the Jones Plantation with the Highwayman, where we compare, you know, the one robber who just takes something from you one time, and then the other robber, the government, who just keeps taking something from you the rest of your life and never stops taking from you, you know, and you really just compare these two stories, which one's worse, you know, but
right.
That was sort of a side note I thought of when you were talking about Lysander Spooner, but, you know, what I like about the idea of voluntary, doing things voluntary or voluntarism, is it gives you this feeling of action, right? Like, cause it's like in a time of emergency or something's going down, if you say, can I get any volunteers? You know, right. Like those people that jump up and grab the door or start moving the debris or whatever it is, help the person out of the car. Those are the action takers. Those are the people that actually make a difference in this world and that become the heroes of that later when they look back in history, they're going to say, oh, it was those volunteers that made the difference. So we all have two options as I see it right now going forward. We could just kind of live our life and from our own ego based, you know, do as we're told and do what everybody else is doing, just try to get along and survive. Or we can become volunteers to try to make the future in some way better. Because if we don't, it's going to continue on the shitty trajectory it's on. So maybe Leslie, you want to say something, and then, you know, you guys can comment on that.
I'll just kind of say that, you know, I think voluntary behavior is two sides of the spectrum. You know, that we do things voluntarily for the right reason, perhaps, or, you know, or in a way that doesn't do harm, and even if it to others, but people still have rights to do things to themselves that may not be great, right? There's what we do, but there's also the right to not do, like the idea that it's not really okay for someone else to try to, you know, twist my arm to do something they want me to do. I shouldn't be forced to do something. I should have voluntary interactions, you know, so it's both what you do and what you don't do.
You know, even inaction is still technically action, you know, because it's like you're still making a choice. You know, you just chose to do nothing. You could choose to step aside. You still did something. So, you know, and with voluntarism, it's a classic rebrand of anarchism. And it's necessary in times like this to approach things and to concede certain things and say, hey, you know, maybe right around now with how things are going, it might be better to present the ideas of absolute freedom in terms of saying it more calling it voluntarism instead of anarchism for the time being, because that's a big scary word. Ooh. And people are going to be like, oh, that the news told me that means Molotov cocktails and cars getting flipped over and just, you know, warlords and everything. It's like, well, okay. How about we describe it like this? How would it sound if we lived in a world where people's actions were their own, that we weren't coercing one another to do things, that our interactions with one another weren't based on an ad baculum, and we actually chose to treat each other with the respect that we all know that we deserve, that we ourselves would like in return, and that's how we go forward. How would that sound? And if you disagree with that, well, I don't want to sound rude, but if you're finding yourself having a problem with that, then maybe you need to go get your head checked, because that's how we achieve a state of freedom. We do the opposite of what is being done now. And it's the most peaceful revolution that we could ever participate in. And it has nothing to do with going out and screaming in the faces of cops or going and setting buildings on fire like we saw a few years ago. That's just chaos. We're talking about finding a way to live within the boundaries of natural law, and we got to clean it up. You know, it's just a part of it. But there's a natural order to things that natural law dictates, and that we don't need to really get our hands all dirty and messy trying to force our way of life upon one another and to force the universe to bend to our will, you know. So
I think that anarchists really are peaceful people. Voluntarists are peaceful, cooperative people. That's our intention. And yet what this idea of walking away, right? It could be walking away from violating someone's rights, you know, using self-control, regulating one's emotions, right? Learning skills to be able to do that. So there's learning and skill and practice on that end, and knowledge about what is a violation. And then there's this other side where, let's say, for example, that I don't want my child to be in a public school, or I don't care if she meets their attendance criteria. And so if I choose to, you know, break those rules or whatever, and I would like to be left alone in that, to be given that autonomy to parent the way I choose, to be responsible according to my own values and what I understand to be right, and seeing what's being done wrong, you know, through the public school system or through the government that wants my money. So the walking away could also be a really kind of scary thing, an act of rebellion where there is risk and violence potentially in retribution to our peaceful action. So I think that's where a lot of anxiety gets built up with people who aren't able to see how do we buck the system, so to speak. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, wait, I'm getting a message from Central. You just broke a whole bunch of thought control code violations right there. We're going to have to shut this stream down.
Oh, no. Bye, everybody.
Can't get rid of us that fast. Sorry.
I mean, we got to the whole idea of walking away, it stems from understanding that you don't that you recognize the autonomy of the other person. That it really stems from not following orders, really. Like that, like there's many different layers of order following out there. And we're not just talking about military and police here. Sure, those are the most evil forms of order following. But there's also order following in terms of like, you're going to pay your taxes. That's what I mean when they do this whole ad baculum thing. That's a logical fallacy. And it just means who's got the bigger stick. And if you don't do what I say, I'm going to hit you with my stick. I'm going to physically harm you. So I'm going to rule by fear. I'm saying that in order for them to rule by fear, they need a lot of people to do what they're being told to do. And if you just walk away, so it takes a lot of people to be doing this in order for it to work. Because unfortunately, one person can do it and make a statement, and maybe something will change a little bit at a time. And that time has come and gone. I think that there might be more people talking about these ideas than ever before, at least in the public setting. Now that we have the great age of information and communication via the internet. But there's people in the past that were islands, and they did things just because they knew that it was right. And they didn't do it because I'm thinking about Larkin Rose at the moment, when he basically told the federal government, I'm not paying your taxes anymore, come and get me. And then they did, and they sentenced them, and they did all that stuff. And he spent like a year in federal prison because he didn't pay his taxes, you know? And so, but since then, he would even say that there seems to be a lot more, and we need more numbers, really. That's what it comes down to. So, I mean, I'm not trying to say that we can't not affect change, that one person can't do it, but it takes a whole lot more people to really make a big difference because that's just how it works.
That's right on the lines, James, of where I wanted to go next. What I wanted to say was, well, I was talking about, we have these various conversations with people in our time, whether it's at a conference or in public or people we know personally or on the podcast, right? And there's this development of things we notice in conversations. And one of them we've already bridged, which is the gap that always shows up with the word anarchy. And even though people get it sometimes intellectual, they still think that word means chaos, you know, and it's like, you get so frustrated of hitting your head against the wall. It's like, forget it. But, you know, the conversation I've had over and over where we suggest this concept that government is slavery and voting is not helping that. It's coercion, right? It's another aspect of the slavery that we're experiencing. And people a lot of times get tripped up right there in my experience, in my real life conversations. And they start like, saying, well, if we just got rid of government, you guys know where I'm going with this, right? Like, it's the immediate thing they want to jump to is start trying to say, like, they want you to provide the total solution. They're like, well, you know, what's going to keep people from just robbing each other? Society's going to go crazy if there's no rules, right? Like, they're imagining, like, overnight, like, all of a sudden, someone hits a switch, no more government, and then the next day... it's no government world and shit's just like off the hook, right? And it's like, yeah, I guess if someone just hit a switch like that, that would be pretty freaking abrupt. But it's silliness to even think that way, because the bridge from here to there is a bridge of thought. First, we have to understand the concept before we can, you know, throw the ball, before we can get things moving, before anything's going to happen. There would have to be first the realization of what we were going to do. Like I've described before, if you want to put water in a bucket, first, you got to think inside your head, I'm going to put some water in the bucket. The water doesn't just start going in the bucket and your hand doesn't start doing it before you think, hey, I should put some water in the bucket. So, you know, I think we have to really figure out and talk about how's this going to work? How's this transition going to work? And maybe we can help kind of describe that for people, how that might actually work and conceive of the future without imagining this abrupt thing that's inconceivable, that that's not how shit goes down. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
I have been a person in the past and I'm trying to be a little bit more positive, but not have that dose of hopium that some people fall into. I think sometimes that, yeah, what you're saying is exactly how it would go. If we woke up tomorrow and the government were gone, there'd be a lot of violent people thinking, now I can get away with everything I've always wanted to do. And it might be true. The difference is that I don't think they would last for very long because of the amount of actually objectively good people that exist, people that do know the difference between right and wrong. They just think that the government's the arbitrator of that. And if without that arbitrator, then they would still know the difference between right and wrong. They just wouldn't have that pillar, that crutch to lean on and to wait for, you know what I'm getting at there. So there might be a little bit of a purge situation but then again, how long would it really last? I don't think it would last for very long at all. I really don't. I personally wouldn't be worried about my neighbors. Think about it. How much does government really, other than, I was just talking to my wife about this like yesterday, how much like really just isolate the category of violence into physical violence, like getting smacked upside the head. How many of us, and I know that there are marginalized communities that have a really tough time dealing with government officials, i.e. the police and the military and whatnot. I'm not discounting them. I'm not trying to hide them. I'm just simply saying the majority of people go their whole entire lives without ever feeling the backhand of the government because they are the go along types for the most part. That's how they get along. And that's how they go their entire life without feeling it. But that doesn't mean that they're not good people. You know, that doesn't mean that they need to be hit in order to be good. It just means that they've been taken advantage of. So going forward, like, this is the answer. The philosophy of voluntarism is the answer. Really hard for people to swallow that. But I'm telling you, if we don't do something about the problems that we're having, like I mentioned earlier in the conversation, we need to start doing the opposite of the things that got us here. What got us here are lies, coercion, theft, all of these different things that are terrible, terrible things that people do to one another on a daily basis. And those people are government officials and the order followers that enforce their laws. And it's a trickle-down effect on the good people that follow the law, that abide by it, that obey the laws because they think that they should. So we need to replace that with what? Voluntarism, you know? And yeah, things could get rough, but I mean, you know.
I think it's important to recognize that that there's both our individual autonomy, which we're recognizing and valuing, and recognize that we need to unite together with other autonomous people to walk away or say no to coercive, you know, government behaviors, right? And it's through our unity with an understanding of respecting like our free will and our rights to do what we want to do, right? Unless we're other than hurt people. And that it's basically like a boycott, you know, where if enough people understand the ground rules that you don't, you know, commit murder, assault, rape, theft, trespass, or coerce people to, you know, do what you want, we can get along, you know, in a mutual respect and agree to say no together, which will bring, you know, could potentially really be very powerful. And I think also in that unity, there is, you know, and especially when you agree on principle, there's a safety in that, right? That's because people are in fear and they are not trusting. And so they are looking to a government organization of some sort or police, you know, system to provide safety. But what I'm noticing is most people really do recognize that those systems aren't keeping us safe. They're not looking out for our best interests, including the healthcare system, and that people are really having to rely on their own personal resources, you know, to get by in the world right now. You know, people are living in, you know, more crowded conditions, you know, because housing prices have gone up. You know, people are leaving the traditional, you're not traditional medical system, but the Western medical system more and turning to alternatives. And so I think that we're already in a certain, there's a wave of this. And if, you know, we can get this word out to these folks who are out there already, you know, creating their own separate parallel systems in some way, whether it's homesteading or canning their own food or whatever it is, the more that we can reach and connect in brother sisterhood, you know, and essentially I would guess that most of those people would agree about those fundamental rights. It's this, but working on eliminating the fear of punishment, the fear of losing your house or whatever it might be that's keeping people kind of going along to get along.
Yeah. And it all, I mean, when we really just do like the etiology of the a situation where somebody is losing their house, who's coming to take it? The law enforcement officers on behest of the government. And so they're not peacekeeping. They're not here for your protection. They're here to enforce the laws, the government scribbles that they write down and they can change whenever they want. It's moral relativism at best, and it's evil at worst. And those are both true statements. And so it brings to mind the idea of like, well, there are people out there that would have a lot of trouble defending themselves for themselves on their own behalf. Like that. So yeah, is there something wrong with a group of people that are teaming up and saying, if there's trouble in the neighborhood, we're going to go and respond and we're going to put a stop to a violent situation if one should occur? No, there's nothing wrong with that at all whatsoever. In any point in history, forward, backward, present, doesn't matter. The problem occurs when they don't do that, when they become law enforcement officers, because the laws can change whenever the politicians want them to change. And that's the truth. Yeah. If people have a problem with that, like, I don't know how else to spell it out for you. You know, there's nothing wrong with having men and women who stand up and volunteer to say, hey, I'm a capable, strong person who cares about my community. And I'm going to put my neck on the line to make sure that my community is a safe place to live. Nothing wrong with that. We all actually kind of do that already. You know, when we go and we walk down the street and we see someone in need of help and we help them, whether it be an old lady, you know, dealing with somebody giving her heck, you know, like somebody do, you know, we all deal with situations in life where we do the right thing. That's a completely, you know, awesome situation to be in, where you walk away, you're like, I just helped somebody. That's fucking great. Yes, let's go. And I'm saying that, you know, putting on a funny costume and threatening people with a gun and saying, oh, I'm just here to do my job. I got pulled over a couple weeks ago, and I like to ask police officers one question, because it's in my nature. It's in my nature to antagonize these people just a little bit, but I do it. I try to be respectful, because at the end of the day, yeah, they might be an evildoer, but they are still a human being, and maybe asking a couple of just the right questions might help them, you know, get the little hamster running on the wheel up there. And I just simply ask if the government, this is the question. Okay. If the government were to ever pass a law that was or is a clear violation of human rights, would you enforce that law or would you walk away from the job and say, I'm not doing this? And so far, every time I've asked that question to police officers, I get pretty much the same response. And it goes a little something like this. It depends on the law. That's what they say. Swiftly followed by I have a family to feed too. So they're doing all this for a paycheck. That's my proof for myself that I choose to try to share with others, because it's really kind of startling when you think that like a decent person that you think is putting on this, you know, this costume and walking around claiming to protect the community and the, like, they swear an oath, all these things, you know, but the oath that they swear is to enforce the law, not to protect the community. We know this already. They don't have any obligation to protect us. Their obligation is to enforce the law. But that's the truth of the matter. So, I mean, they need to be turned into voluntarists too. But how do we do that? You just go, all you can really do with these people is ask questions. All you can really do with anybody is ask questions and to pose the idea in a constructive manner where you're not forcing it upon people. Because that's the other thing as well. It's like, how do we do this tightrope walk of being like, my idea is really good and you should do what you should do my idea without violating the very principles you choose to espouse? How do you do that? You just ask questions. You try to help them along and help them change their mind for themselves. That's what I think is the best approach and how we really go forward and create a better future. I mean, if you understand this philosophy, if you understand natural rights and you understand the principles, formulate in your own mind, and my advice to you guys, the audience or whoever, formulate in your own mind, in your own words, a set of questions that you could present to people to help them along with thinking about their own actions, the things that they support, the organizations, the institutions that they support, and whether or not those institutions and organizations are moral and are actually doing things that are for the benefit of all humankind and all, you know, from here and into the future, you know, because I keep mentioning the future and it's like such an obvious thing that many, many people probably don't really think about a lot. I think that we're in a state of mind control, and that we think about instant gratification. We think about the present maybe a little too much. I'm not saying with that present moment awareness is bad. Yeah, we need to know what's going on right now. We need to know what we're doing right now. Yeah, what's going on in my mind, what's going on in my body, my surroundings, great. But I'm having an impact. What's that impact look like? What kind of future are my kids going to have to adopt and come into and try to navigate through? You know, like it's not fair for us to just
big picture thinking.
Yeah. Big picture thinking, you know,
lacking in so many cases.
I don't mean to filibuster. I'm sorry.
No, feel free.
Just excited.
Know, I love hearing you talk. And actually, I've always wanted to say too, you have a really good speaking voice. It's like great for podcasts. Like I like listening to your podcast on the go. I think a lot of people do at work and stuff, just have it in the ear. And I think you're right. Like, keep on suggesting these ideas and thoughts. Like in the way I see things happening, like change really doesn't usually happen abruptly unless you're talking about like an earthquake or a tsunami and those kind of things you don't really want to be around for. And the same is true of human when things build up for a long time and humans don't deal with them and then things kind of go crazy or explode. That's because things weren't dealt with. But any change, any real change happens kind of gradually. Little by little, the minds of people shift over time. There's various pressures. I was recently reading the autobiography of Malcolm X, and in his lifetime, you really see a stark difference from the time where he grew up, and it was partly the places he moved to, but where he grew up, like being a black person, you might as well be a slave. Wherever you go, whoever you talk to, you're treated 100% different from everyone else. He gets a little older and he moves to another town, and there's sort of like a subsection of town where you're okay to be who you are and be black. You're just different from the white side of town, you know? And then as he gets older, he moves to another place. I forgot where it was, Chicago or something. And people are just kind of like, black guys are dating white guys and people, no one's tripping out on it. You know, it's like little by little throughout the years of his life and his observations, he could see this change happening, right? There was books and writers. There was not like podcasts we have now. Back then we had writers. people like Baldwin, you know, people speaking. Pretty soon there was pressure from a lot of different angles of saying, hey, what are we doing in our society? We have people living in your house that are your slave. You know, like there started to be this moral pressure, right? And there was all these financial pressures back then too, why people were doing that, you know? And if you think about it, even when all these real intelligent thinkers are coming out and realizing like we can't have slaves, you know, there was still like women were treated terribly. They couldn't even vote, you know, like the minds of people were, they were getting certain things, you know, like right now we think it's like your average person anywhere here is if you see someone beat a child, they're like, what the hell are you doing? You know, we want to beat them. There were times when people and places in the world where people beat children all the time and no one thought twice about it. You just kick a kid as you're walking down the street. You know, that's just normal life. The mentality and the way people think changes over time, and it changes depending on people taking that voluntary action to choose to like, hey, we need to be better people. We should treat one another well. You know, people setting that precedent and leaving some sort of legacy for the next people in their area that, you know, those people really cared. Let's be like them. Let's not wreck things, right? So we have to be the ones now to create that legacy and to start making that slow, progressive mental change in the people all around us until it becomes obvious, crystal clear to everyone. That's not going to be quick, you know, but I think what we're doing is that process. We're talking through these things, you know, we're trying to envision it as hard as it is, you know?
Yeah.
Gandhi knew that through his actions, the British Empire would not be able to resist enacting violence upon him and other people in India at the time. He knew that the whole world would be watching and the world would be outraged by the exposure of the violence of the British Empire upon the Indian people. He, through peace and knowing that the world would see, he had faith in the world to have the reaction that they did. And the British Empire were basically shunned and chased out of India. And so with that example, one man can make a difference. One woman can make a difference.
Yeah.
You know, when the world sees what happens to peaceful people at the hands of violent thugs, we do have this like, we do have this like natural reaction to point and say, that's fucking wrong. That shouldn't be happening. And unfortunately, I mean, it's going to take a lot of that going forward. You know, we make progress as time goes on. You're right, Chris. Yeah. Like,
where to go?
You know, and when we see the progress that we've already made, you know, where, you know, as a silly example, like even back in like the 70s, into the 80s, like if you have a wife at that time and she wants a credit card, you have to like tell the bank it's okay to give your wife a credit card. Like that's fucked up. Sorry to use that language, but I mean, that's really messed up, you know? And I don't think that the banks and the credit card companies should be supported, but like take that idea. That's a messed up idea, you know?
So this is bringing to my mind the cognitive dissonance that's going on within most people, that on one hand, they know it's not okay to steal or coerce or hurt other people. But then on the other hand, they justify the government doing it or the police doing it and somehow live with this contradiction. And so I wanted to share that, like, in addition to this sort of Socratic questioning or probing questions, there's a method, you know, I'm a social worker, right? I'm a clinical social worker. And so there's a therapy approach called motivational interviewing, which probably has a lot of tools that would be helpful to what we're doing and teaching natural law. And one of the key techniques is just offering reflective listening. So reflection is listening carefully to other people, you know, and then could be summarizing back what you hear them say. It could be, you know, kind of a quick a little reflection of, oh, this is your emotion and this is what you said. And it shows people that we're listening. It's offering some empathy. And through that reflection, you can also highlight the contradictions that you're hearing. So it's like, yeah, I hear really clearly that you value honesty and you know, value your property. And yet you also, you know, are complicit with government and their unlawful taking of your money and, you know, coercing you to do X, Y, Z, right? So you can respectfully share these contradictions and highlight the dissonance that people have. And I think that this is a very patient, this requires a lot of patience. You know, the work that I do, working with people one-on-one, is about, you know, transformation of one's thinking and healing traumas and those things that get in people's way of being aligned, right, in mind, body, spirit, or their thoughts, feelings, and actions become out of alignment, and they're in an internal chaos, really, and not happy with that, but not really able to sort this all out. And I think ultimately when we need to draw the connection between the internal chaos that people are in and how it's really being set up in our society to be in a state of dissonance, you know?
Yeah. The internal chaos, it leads to the outward facing chaos, like the thoughts and emotions being, the actions being a product of your thoughts and emotions, you know, directly. So I like that. You know, trying to approach people to get on the same level as them and clearing up any sort of misunderstandings and everything. It's a very respectful manner of communication. It really does kind of like bridge the gap. It kind of eliminates all disrespect out of the equation. And it can really make people, like you said, like the empathy, being on the receiving end of that is an incredible feeling. And I think that a large part of our communities and a large part of our society, we've lost touch with that aspect of like, show each other some empathy.
It's respectful, right? And when someone feels listened to and given enough respect to be have their point of view considered, then they're more likely to listen to you. And there's also when you are not aggressive so much in highlighting a person's, let's say, how their behavior is creating a problem in their life that they don't want, like, you know, maybe drinking too much, right? Then, you know, then it also encourages self-responsibility, right? To look back and to be able to see that, yes, there's a correlation between my behavior and my experience and who gets to choose whether I drink, right? You know, that kind of thing.
I love pointing the finger, right? I'm a person that's like really good at doing that. And, you know, I can't help myself when I hear you say what you just said and say that, like, no, like people have been trained into that, you know? And so who did it? I mean, parents largely taking their kids and putting them into these institutions, like public schools and indoctrination camps. That's, I mean, so like at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, like, yeah, we got personal responsibility and all, but there's a lot of truth that needs to be covered of like, what the heck is really going on and what got us into this situation in the first place. So like we need to heal, but part of the healing process is just coming to terms with the truth and saying, well, how can I reconcile the past? Because moving, again, the theme of moving forward, we have to reconcile the past and understand what the heck got us here, you know, and
it's both. It's both hearing, very much hearing truth in a direct manner and also, you know, doing that internal healing and recognizing our part in it, our participation, you know, in how that is in a, where we are part of the problem and part of the solution. Right?
For the record, I know, like pointing the finger. I'm good at it, whatever. But like I point the finger at myself all the time. Yeah. You idiot! You did something. I was wrong about this. Like, and that's another thing about, you know, coming to terms with the facts and saying, hey, I was wrong about something. And oh my God, I gotta own it. You know, because that's another part of self ownership. Is like you gotta own your actions, you gotta own your mentality, you gotta own every bit of head to toe, in and out of yourself. You gotta own it, man. You wanna own yourself? You wanna be free? Well, own yourself and be free. And then no one can touch you, you know? And then people are going to look at you and go, geez, man, you're really happy. How'd you get, what's going on? Like, you've changed. Like, it seems like overnight, what's going on with you? And then you just go, hey, I figured out my BS, and I'm just able to do things now. Like, it sounds wicked easy, right? But it's the truth. Like, we own every aspect of ourselves. Then you know, the only thing left to do is to eliminate the schmuck down the road who thinks that they can tell you what to do and force you to do it. And you're like, no, I'm going to decide, you know. And then that breeds confidence, this sense of self-ownership. It breeds confidence. And then with that confidence comes courage, and then with that courage comes a powerful example of what self-ownership can bring, and that will inspire others. And that's how one person can really make a difference. And I mean, so
that's that responsibility.
Man,
we have the ability. We're able to think, to say things, to write things. And why would we shirk that, why would we shirk that responsibility we have? I think part of the reason that our modern world's very chopped up and fragmented. There's not a lot of continuity generationally. And many of us are lacking our bigger family, cousins, grandparents. The community around us is kind of all divided, separated from different places, have just all behind closed doors watching their own video screens. A lot of the way we maintain a certain level of confidence, and like I'm saying, you know, that kind of feeling in a community of what's right, a lot of that is maintained by the community itself, kind of knowing who each other are and talking. Can you imagine a tribe that met every night at the fire? You know, like, you're not going to be able to look in the eyes of your neighbor while you're kidnapping their child, right? You're going to be like, well, what are you doing? You're my neighbor. We're together every night, you know, but because we've allowed ourselves to live in a society that's so fragmented and sliced up, and we don't have cohesive family units or passing down knowledge from one generation to another, from mother to daughter, father to son, etc., you know, we're really at a disadvantage in that way. But that's kind of what needs to be rebuilt, that culture of excellence that Richard describes in Autonomy. We have to kind of take on the bull by the horns, you know, metaphorically, and start to create excellence, start to create this culture of other people that care, which I really enjoy the community we've had with you, James, even though we haven't met in person yet. I'm sure we will one day. We'll make it happen. But, yeah, you know, there's a lot of other folks like yourself on the One Great Work network that are out there talking about truth or natural law. Or, you know, people like Larkin Rose and, you know, all these people we've met online and shared our work with and shared their work with. That's kind of like the old version of what I was saying, when people writing letters and they're like, are you, you know, should we really be keeping slaves in our houses? Is that a good idea? You know, eventually the idea started to sink in, like, no, that wasn't a good fucking idea. And the same thing has to happen now. But those of us that have the ability to respond, that have a respect for your own amazing technology of your body and how cool it is that you can think and come up with a cool plan, like, help us out. Think, come up with a cool plan. We need it. We need to work together, and we need to start taking whatever steps we can to get more people aware of this reality. And then when people are aware of it and it starts to be normalized in mindset, then more physical world actions can change. But until then, you're just being at the gates, but you have no weapons and no tools, because the thought hasn't developed enough for people to understand what the idea is, what we're trying to storm the castle. You know, they don't even know what the fuck we're doing here. They're just, oh, freedom, you know?
You know, and to that point, like, even if the storming of the castle idea worked and they got freedom, they wouldn't know what to do with it. When they
right,
got
let's
it.
Get another king.
Just as quickly as they achieved it, they'd squander it away yet again.
Right.
But if we are, like, being a powerful example of excellence, you know, if we're living that way, and that's the most that any one person can really be expected to do. Be a powerful example of excellence. You mentioned communities and families not having the strong ties that they once had. You know, that's funny because strong communities have also a strong sense of trust. The members of that community and or family, they know each other. They know habits of one another. They have trust. And with that trust comes freedom because of the idea that like when you know somebody isn't out to get you, it's easier to communicate with them. It's easier to coexist with them. So that's another thing that we, as far as being a good example goes, like reach out to your neighbors, get to know them. You might not agree with everything that they say or do, but like get to know them. Form a sense of trust that I'm not going to come steal your stuff. I'm not going to come make you do stuff. Just want to know your name. I just want to say, hey, you know, invite them over for dinner, have dinner with your neighbor or something. I don't know. But like this destruction of communities and families has been done intentionally in order to destroy that sense of trust, because then you destroy a person's sense of trust in other people. Then what you have done, you replace that sense of trust with a sense of agitation or like, you know, distrust and anxiety and a little paranoia and everything. And those are the types of people that are the most easy to control and the most easy to get to do things that they otherwise may not ever be compelled to do. So it's a big job, but like you can just start with yourself. And if you're not out there doing crazy shiesty things to your neighbors, then like at least on your street, things are going to be cool, you know?
Yeah. Glenn, I think it was Glenn Tramp and a recent Dissolving the Divide interview had something. He was actually quoting a character in a video game or something, but that basically said that your reputation is everything. And I think that there's something to that idea of a reputation because it's built through your actions and your trustworthiness. You become a person of integrity who does the right thing, who cares about the community, you know, and other people and what happens. And then from there, you develop, you know, a sense of being trusted and have a reputation of being a good person. So then the networks, the bonds, the links build stronger, right? And it's through that strength of those filial and familial type bonds that we then build a defense and also a safety and a protective net. And when principles are the guiding force, you know, that unites us, then that is really ultimately what creates safety. And with that foundation, then we can come together and as people create services and support systems for those most vulnerable in our communities, the developmentally disabled, the elders, the isolated. You know, as a social worker, the history of the field started with voluntary action, care, women who cared and came together to help feed the poor or provide, you know, services to those disenfranchised. And so it is when we talk about voluntary action and the individual nature of that, it is really in combination with the care and the recognition that we're all connected, this mm-hmm. inner connection that we have. And that is we can do this together, you know, mm-hmm. without the need for all of these external structures, which are kind of tricking us to think we need them, but we don't.
And when people hear you say that when people hear anyone say that, like, we're all connected, like, I don't know about you, but, you know, I imagine some people might be like, oh, that's some hippy dippy bullshit. But it's like, no. Just think of it like on a real practical level. And that's all we're really saying is like, we are all connected. Like the whole 6 degrees of separation idea, the idea that like you could park your car wrong on your street and like your neighbor's going to drive by and like be like, oh man, now you're in the way. Like you go to the grocery store, like we're all connected. Like we all have interactions yeah. with, you know, it's a very real very, very down to earth concept where we can really apply that to our everyday life and have just a mutual respect on the basis of just you exist at the same time as I do.
I can't, you know, grow all my own food, prepare all my own food, sew my own clothes, obtain the materials, and do that all by myself, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So like I just had that thought and I was like, well, you know, it's a good opportunity to really ground that idea of interconnection between everybody and like not, and to kind of like bring it down to a personal level and mm-hmm. try to help people look at it from a different angle. You know?
Yeah. Thank you for that. Cause I do think that's important. You know, it's very practical life stuff we're talking about.
We often talk about the interconnection between people on more on like a consciousness basis. There's a lot of that going around, but if we bring it down to the, you know, just like real tangible life, like and just how we enter, it's much more of a eye-opening concept. But it's like, yeah, and we just treat each other with a mutual respect for the very fact that we exist at the same time. It doesn't need to be anything more than that. We can explore all the ideas. There's nothing wrong with that. And we can take it to its ultimate conclusion of like, you know, we're all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. And you know, that old Bill Hicks joke, that's true. It's funny because it's true type of joke. But at the same time, we can really just bring it down to the most practical, real world, tangible example of we just exist at the same time. So why isn't that just good enough? Why can't that be good enough? You know,
in existing and in the process of obtaining things, like Leslie saying, I can't do everything. No one can. There's people that are amazingly talented, but even that person needs certain things. And one thing that has always kept the peace through all of time is trade. When your neighbors or people across the water or the people across the land have some thing you desire, you don't want to kill them. You know, you want to trade your stuff with them because they're going to have more of it next year and your family and your kids are going to need their fur or their fruit or whatever it is that you need. And, you know, you can create things for them. So there really is a responsibility other than just being, I think, to produce something of value. We're amazing beings, you know, and we all have talents. And then everybody who is engaged to any extent in understanding the value of their life can't help but producing something, you know. And actually, this is a good excuse to shout out your website again here because you got, let me see if I can bring it up here. Sarah Cross, awesome artist in the community, came up with Spooner here, the mascot, who says don't hurt people and don't steal their stuff. Spooner knows what the solution is, right? That's on thevoluntariestacademy.com. I want you guys to check that out. And if I really want you guys to check out James has done some work explaining and reading from Spooner's work. But I think Spooner's a good example of what we're saying because his whole thing was like he was trying to create a way to deliver mail for people.
Yeah.
And the government at the time, they didn't like the fact that he was doing better than their business. And so they were trying to shut him down with laws. And that's what pissed him off. It's like, wait a second, I'm providing a good business for people. And so, honestly, I do think going forward that that's kind of more realistically how the progression might look like is people taking over handling services and goods that right now is handled through and regulated by government and people doing it their own way anyway. And the more people that start appreciating how much less expensive that is and how much better quality things that could be obtained and traded, the more they're going to want to do that. And I know you're going to get into some Austrian economics, Rothbard and that type of thing. There are a lot of solutions already thought of and written down in lengthy form. And so I think it's important that we kind of regurgitate these ideas and let people aware of them. Because when I first heard of Lysander Spooner, I had no idea who he was. They're not going to talk to you about him in school. I'll tell you that for damn sure.
Right.
So there's a lot of solutions out there. A lot of people have written extensively how we can solve these problems. And it does have to do with trade, and it does have to do with understanding our value, and it does have to do with taking some initiative and voluntary actions and solving problems.
Yeah. I mean, that's there's nothing wrong with wanting to have a happy, healthy life. And unfortunately, the things that we need in order to achieve that is, those things, those products have been monopolized, if that's even a word. That's a word. If it's not, I just made it up. No, it is. I'm just kidding.
Good word.
The monopolies have been just taken over all those things in order to control us. And you're right, Chris. The fact of the matter is that in large part, every so-called service that government claims to provide to the people can be done faster, cheaper, and more efficient. The products tend to even last longer. There's no such thing as planned obsolescence in a free market that doesn't exist. You know, so I haven't. At least I don't think it does. People want quality products instead of this planned obsolescence BS that we're dealing with today, where like a washing machine lasts for 5 years, you know. And so in any case, like, yeah, like that's something that people need better examples of as well, you know. And as far I was laughing about Lysander Spooner because he learned the law and he's like, I'm a lawyer now. And they're like, no, you're not. You didn't. And he's like, yes, I am. He started like practicing law without anyone's permission, quote unquote permission. And like they shut down his mail service because he was pissed at the U.S. Postal Service. He's like, these people suck. And you're right. He was doing a much better job. And I have a soft spot in my heart for Lysander Spooner because he's from Boston. So, you know. I really appreciate him, you know. And one of the things that he said in that essay on natural law is something along the lines of that, you know, basically the whole point of life is to live honestly and to give every man his due, based on, of course, like the unalienable rights of life, life, liberty, and property, right? Well, they call it the pursuit of happiness, but it can kind of translate into something like this. Like, what does that mean? Like, to live honestly and to give every man his due. Like, well, based on the principles of natural law, what am I due? Like, what am I owed? Well, I'm owed to not have my rights trampled on, you know, to be able to own my property. And to, you know, and what do I owe? What does it mean to live honestly? Well, I mean, not only to like not lie and to tell the truth and all that great stuff that's on the surface, but also at the end of the day, like, I mean, you don't go around stealing from people. You know, when you would acquire property, it's not because you stole it, you know? So, and then when you look at other people, to give them their due is to treat them the way that you'd want to be treated, right? So, I mean, I think about these things. I haven't got my rhetoric down on that, all that, but like, I don't know. I think about these things from time to time, and like, what would that mean today? Like, what does to live honestly and to give every man his due? What does that mean? I think that's a roundabout way to kind of like translate it into the modern time. You know, we just gotta, you know, kind of apply that. You know, I really appreciated what Spooner wrote about that, you know, and Sarah Cross, now that if we're talking about Lysander Spooner, like she's kick ass, and she came up with, I basically made a Facebook post one day and I was like, who can do this? And she responded and we teamed up on that cartoon character. And yeah, I mean, oh, people might try to criticize me for including a cartoon character in my website and in my I guess you'd call it like branding or whatever, and it's like, oh well, what are you trying to do? Reach kids? Yes. Yes, I am. Because this is good information, and children should learn. I mean, Children should know. Children already largely know this stuff. They know that when their property is stolen from them, that they should go and get it back. Like it's this natural feeling that we all have. Like it, when you're
you gotta
when
get you're them getting, before they learn the wrong stuff.
Yeah, when you're getting punched in the face. Like I got into fights when I was a kid. No one needed to tell me that getting punched in the face was like wrong and that I should defend myself. No one needed to tell me that. I just knew it. It's like an instinct. You know, when you have your own toy or something and somebody comes over, another kid takes your toy, you're like, hey, that's mine. You didn't ask for that. I'm not sharing today. You know, yeah, maybe you should share a little bit and be kind to one another, be excellent to one another. But at the end of the day, if you don't want to share your Tonka truck, you don't have to. It's yours. So, I mean, children know this stuff. So, I don't know, with all the other bad education that it's being given to children, and if you want to call it education, I guess that'd even be a stretch, but all the other bad information that's being communicated to children these days, what's so wrong about some good information, you know? And have a cool little cartoon squirrel with a turtle shell. And the you know, he's wearing a turtle shell because of the tortoise and the hare, right? And so in that story, the tortoise and the hare are racing, and the hare is very cocky. His hubris leads to his downfall. He falls asleep under a tree, and the tortoise just keeps going and going. Doesn't give up. He just stays going, and he wins. He wins the race. And it's about perseverance. It's about pushing yourself. It's about a constant effort. And then, you know, and then the squirrel and the grasshopper, that story where winter's coming, the grasshopper is lazy. He's just kicking back, relaxing, resting on his laurels all summer long. The squirrel's running around, gathering up the food, getting ready for winter, being prepared. And when winter comes, the squirrel's sitting pretty. He's like, I'm cool. I can hang out in my nest and hibernate or do whatever squirrels do in the winter, and I'm good. And the grasshopper's like, dude, you got to help me. I messed up. I didn't do anything. And the squirrel's like, all right, man, you can come and hang out with me. There's plenty enough to go around. So, I mean, that's hard work. That's constant labor, you know, and that's the Latin saying labore et constantia is where Spooner, the idea comes from. A hard work and persistence and just making sure that you're constantly prepared and making sure that you have the foresight to know that you shouldn't be just a lazy bag of bones and that you're working towards something that is achievable and that is going to be for the betterment of other people. And hopefully you can also benefit from it. You know, I have, if we have a little bit more time, I wrote down 7 steps and or rules of, you can call them rules. I like to call them steps or a guideline to being a better voluntarist or to some place to start. And so number one is like it's the bedrock, right? As I've described it before, this is the bedrock. Without this one being, and they're not really in any particular order, but number one is number one for a specific reason. Without this, the rest of it doesn't matter. Doesn't mean a thing. So number one is to practice selflessness. Okay. Show care for others and you'll get reciprocation of that care, you know, and that being the bedrock, it all everything else relies on care. What do you care about? How do you show your care? And so that's number one. Number two is to own yourself both in spirit and in action. So in spirit, you know what's going on inside. You have your soul. It's yours. It's the animation. It's the force of whatever the force that animates life in the universe. You've been touched by that, and it's a beautiful thing. So you own your own soul. You own what's going on inside, and you own the outward expression of that, your own actions. It's about accountability. It's about owning your own body. It's about owning your own mind. Okay. And then that goes into number three, which would be to remain calm in thought, emotion, and action. And people might hear that and go, but wait a minute. Does that mean to be a pacifist? No, no, that's not what I'm saying. Righteous indignation is called righteous indignation because you're in the right to be angry. What I'm trying to convey by saying remain calm is that you are in control of your own thoughts, emotions, and actions, even in a state of anger. It's like when Bruce Banner finally gains control over the Hulk, he becomes a completely different entity altogether. He has the strength and he has the ability to control that rage and to make sure that he isn't out of line and causing all this destruction. So when we have the opportunity to express our emotions in a calm, controlled manner, express away, you know, be angry, be sad, you know, cry. I've been crying a lot lately because of all of the, I don't want to get into it because I'll cry again, but it's about being in control of it. So number four would be to think things through. So like when you have control over your thoughts, you see them through, you think about thinking, you know, think things through before you act. Think about, is this action going to initiate harm? Like, what am I about to do? You know, like, what am I about to say? And that leads to number five, speak the truth. You know, we can all respect our own personal experiences, and we can all respect everybody's personal opinions on certain matters, but truth exists. And we have an obligation to speak the truth about situations. And it might be hard to find the truth, but we need to be able, that's when you say, I don't know enough. I don't know enough to speak about this. So that's another version of speaking the truth. A lot of people want to have answers, and that's okay. But sometimes we don't. And when we don't, you need to be honest about that. And why is it important to speak the truth? I mean, you got to think about it. That's why thinking things through, your own thoughts are in line with truth. And then, you know, when you're speaking, that's an action. And when you're speaking, you're also putting a message out into the world. That vibration energy is carrying over into somebody else's brain, and you might be planting a seed of thought in another person's mind. And when we're resonating with the truth and we're in line with the truth, there's almost like a natural harmony that happens as a result. So like this is a very important step, because if we're going by speaking the truth, you are not deceiving anybody. Therefore, you are not withholding facts and factual information from other people. And that's a very important aspect of being a voluntarist and making sure that you're not violating another person's rights, because a lot can happen as a result of a lie. Number six would be to be bold, to be courageous. So don't act foolishly. You know, don't say I'm not afraid. Understand the fear. When you're in that situation, act right, even in the face of fear. Right. And speaking the truth, that requires being bold, which is why I wanted to include that in number six, because you got to be bold, not just act bold, be bold, be it, be courageous. I think a difference between acting courageous and being courageous. We're talking about things that make up your character, not just actions. Right. Of course, there are actions too, but we're talking about your character. Who are you? Number seven, last but certainly not least. And again, this was not in any specific order because it's really hard to do that, but I like to challenge myself and see if I can. But number seven is don't steal anything, either spiritual or material. Okay. That is like the way to put a nice big ribbon on the whole thing, you know. And like, maybe there's more, maybe people can add a number eight, a number nine, whatever. Cool. Do it in the comments, whatever. It's cool. Be a part of the conversation. But that's where I think that it kind of like, you know, a nice cap to all of it is don't steal anything ever, you know, and that's an exercise of free will saying I am not. It's one thing to sit around and talk about all the things that I can do. It's really easy to do that. What are the things that I know I can do, but I choose not to? I know that I can go around. Me personally, James Cordoner knows that he can go around and cause a whole lot of chaos. I am very capable of causing chaos. I spent 20 years of my life doing it. So I know what I'm capable of, and I choose to not initiate harm. And that's why number 7 is so important, to make sure that the aspect of don't steal anything, either spiritual or material. Don't steal people's time. Don't steal their attention. These are sorts of spiritual currencies that we choose, that we want to not steal, right? And then we can go back to the 7 transgressions of natural law, you know, and those are great starting points to jump off of and to really understand theft, you know, murder, rape, assault, trespass, actual theft, and then the other two, deception and coercion. You know, you don't want to do those 7 things either. And those are all different, just different forms of theft at the end of the day. So like, those are the material ones, other than lying and deception. That's more spiritual than material, but those can have, that's such a broad category of theft that the consequences of a lie are so dire and can be so destructive. And I don't know, I already talked about that with number 5, speaking the truth. That's why that was its own thing, because of how destructive lying can really, really be, you know? So with all that in mind, if people can really, I know it sounds like I'm an idealist here, but I don't think that these things are impossible. And usually an idealist would be somebody who's like presenting like a utopian type of ideology, and something that like that the natural world contradicts, or it's something that's in contradiction with the natural world. So I don't consider this to be sort of like an idealist point of view, because this is about living according to the natural world and with natural law, instead of fighting it so hard against it, that, you know, which is what's led to all the uncivilized, frankly, you know, behavior. Yeah. And so, I mean, but, this is the path of self-ownership, you know, this is like some of the steps that any one person can really start to take in their own life and try to be of better impact around of to the world around them, you know? And so, what do you guys think of that?
I think those 7 points you made are awesome. I think that these concepts are so excellent, and you did a great job of summarizing so many things into smaller, like easier to explain, like categories, you know? You did a good job with that. Yeah.
I like the number 7, which is why I was trying to, like, you know, get it down to 7. Like, I know that, like, the number 7 is a pretty important number.
Yeah, no, I think you encompass so much in those 7 steps. And I think that what you shared today is so important. I think it's the foundation of what we really all need to be sharing. And I'm so glad that you have this new organization of your content, right? With a clearer pathway of going forward.
James, thanks so much for joining us for this convo tonight. There's a lot of stuff for people to digest and think about, and I hope it propels people to make different choices, take more responsibility, and I just want to give each one of you a chance to shout out your own work and give people some kind of summation to take away. But great episode. Thanks much, guys.
Chris, thank you, man. I've missed you guys. I'm glad to be back and to be, you know, with you guys. And I cherish our friendship, and I really appreciate your time. And if people like what they've heard, they can come right over to voluntaryistacademy.com. That's my website, and they can check out what's going on over there. Come on over, find your way to enjoy the content again. At this point in time, this is June 7th, 2024. And, you know, that's the date that we're recording this. And the channel is very fresh. But I am like thinking to myself, what do I want this channel to look like in like 5 years? So I'm building it. And I want to be looking back and being like, this is what Done Right looks like for this message. And drop on by and don't be afraid to send me a little letter in the contact section, the contacts page. I like to tell everybody, when I'm ending a broadcast or I'm ending a video, I guess nowadays I used to do live streams, but I always like to remind people that you own yourself, period. That's it. We have been tricked into thinking that others may be able to tell us what to do, but at the end of the day, you're the one that's morally culpable for your actions. You own yourself, period. You're not a slave. You are not a slave. You're a prisoner. Let's escape.
Yeah. Well said. And we'll put my tap link in the comments, but alivethrive.life. And that's all. You can just go there and find my stuff. All right.
You could also check her out on Dissolving the Divide on YouTube and Odyssey too. And Leslie's great work, alivethrive.life. All right. Much love, y'all. We'll see you again next Thursday. And evil is the destruction of freedom.